Today's episode of Talking Games is brought to you by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Thanks, Cards Against Humanity.
Hey, everybody. Congratulations. You have arrived at Talking Games HQ, new location.
New location.
You know what, Clayton, we're and Kellen, I apologize.
Thank you.
But here's why I said that.
Mm-hmm.
We're winding down. We got the last four episodes now.
Last four. Mm-hmm.
Can you believe it, people?
Can you believe it? Let's quickly run through the places we've recorded. Your basement, of course.
Of course.
HQ for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the original HQ.
Yeah.
Cards Against Humanity Studios.
Cards Against Humanity. One or two episodes of my apartment. Do you remember those?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Chris Geiger.
The lost episodes.
And Joe Gennaro
My
place. We one time recorded in a church. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. We were recording about that play, which was great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The backstage at the Public House Theater, which we did many times
with
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boy, those were cold winter nights. I remember recording in the back of there and then having my coat on and gloves on because it was so cold there.
Oh, the basement of the Public House Theater, which I think we've talked about before, looked like a kill room.
Yeah.
In a horror movie?
Mm-hmm. The kill room that is just adjoined to where all the evidence is that you need to convict the guy.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I gathered all this these newspaper clippings about myself. I hope you don't mind. My evidence doesn't.
Yeah.
I recorded a couple episodes when you were gone in my former room, which is now the Kellen Tarrant Memorial Podcast Room at Rob Grabowski and John Chesney's.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah.
And now we're at our final place. We're recording the new HQ. Great new apartment, Clayton.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Do not disclose its location on the air.
No.
I'm going off the grid this time, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Too many Talking Games fans tracked me down.
Those talking heads, man, they want a piece of it. They want a piece of it.
No, there's absolutely no crossover with the Talking Heads band, by the way.
There's a band called Talking Heads?
Believe it or not.
Interesting.
It's not just the names of our superfans. What is this podcast, you might be wondering?
Oh, it's a video game podcast.
I think if someone made it here, they know exactly what they're listening to.
Yeah.
So we talked to various people in the Chicago comedy community about different video games, and we're in our last four episodes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what we decided to do is we each took one episode, and we'd pick a topic. Tonight's mine. But first, before we get to that.
Yes, very important stuff.
Our classic fan favorite segment. What are we playing? Clayton, what are you playing?
Okay, so I have played... Yeah, I was moving to this new place.
Yes.
So I've been pretty busy.
Uh-huh.
I have not gone back to Breath of the Wild for a little bit because I've been so busy. But I did mindlessly play a little bit of Overwatch, which was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And
new content coming out tomorrow, supposedly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying Overwatch quite a bit, but I gotta tell you, the thing I want to do right now the most... is go back into Dark Souls 3, The Ringed City.
Oh,
the
right,
latest DLC.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, man, I'm like just barely into it. Like, I beat the first boss, and I think there's a lot more because I just got to what is actually The Ringed City. And it's so cool, and it looks really beautiful. Like, the first part was just like it's like a stepping stone area. So you're like way up high, and you keep having these long drops that like let you survive, but you can't go back at all.
Oh.
So it's really, it's very nerve-wracking, and I spent a lot of time there hunting for items and stuff like that. Really fun, though.
The idea of a ringed city is very Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And terrifying. So.
Is this the last DLC that they're putting out?
Is this That's the last it. Dark Souls?
Yes, I think so. They've said that if they do anything else, it's going to be a separate IP, sort of like Bloodborne was.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You know, it's the same thing. Someone was asking me, like, is there going to be a Witcher 4 the other day? And I was like, no, they've said definitively they're not going to do
that. Right?
Yeah. Because they're like, we don't want to do anything else with this property. We want to just, like, let it be what it is. And I feel like the Dark Souls creator is very hard to, like, get a beat on a lot of the time. But he's, I think he said, like, this is the last thing Dark Souls related he's going to do is this DLC.
Good. That's
and
great.
Yeah, one of the first things that happens is a giant angel flies down from heaven and starts shooting shit at you.
Whoa!
And if you kill her, she just respawns instantly.
I don't like that. I don't like that. Frustrating, right? That seems... and she is an angel? It's definitely an angel?
It's sort of an angelic imagery. Giant wings. You know how they are.
I get it.
I know.
It's not like, you know, the most subtle kind of reference.
Yeah, sure.
But then, you know, spoiler alert, if you find a way to kill them for real, they never come back at all, even if you die and respawn.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the trade-off.
So the gods are dead.
I mean, you know.
Okay.
We're getting into some heavy philosophy.
I'm just saying that's what Dark Souls decided to put that out. I don't think that's a strange jump for me to make.
Dark Souls has always been the world after the gods and the dragons murdered each other, or the gods / dragons go so crazy that they just start murdering everybody.
Yeah.
And will usually become like recluses that you have to go hunt down and murder.
Lord of Cinder.
Yeah. Boy, it's so creepy.
I just have like a one town having a good time in Dark Souls.
That would have been great. You know? If there was like one
a festival
and it's literally like, hey man, I know it's hard out there, but like you can you can just take it easy. And that's a whole expansion. It's a whole DLC in there.
That'd be great.
You engage in fighting, everyone's like, hey buddy, like let's sit down, let's talk.
Yeah.
Like do you want some
a nice stew on?
We got some stew on, we can get you anything you need, but like there's no need to fight.
I would love that, and then you know it's gonna happen. So anybody who like kills one of the NPCs, it immediately like turns the whole world upside down.
Oh,
like it goes totally nuts.
Oh,
and it's like, you triggered it. You did this. Yeah.
You did this.
That would be awesome.
Yikes.
Kellen, how about you?
I finished Horizon Zero Dawn. And Clayton and I were talking briefly before you got here. I don't know the last time I played a game where I was enjoying the game as much at the end as I was at the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah. Really, really fantastic, and I'm going to, despite the fact that I did a lot of the game, I max leveled, I found all the best armor, I did all the best stuff. I'm still going to go back and find all the rest of stuff. I just fucking love this world, Tim! I loved it! It's a great world!
It really is cool.
Yeah.
Tim, I can't wait for you to play it.
You really need to play it eventually.
I got a lot of planets to go scan.
Oh boy.
And a lot of
We'll get to you.
We'll get to you. We'll get to you.
This is still Kellen's time.
It's my time, all right? With four more of these. And then the newest Hearthstone expansion came out, and I'm enjoying that quite a bit. It's like any Blizzard game. You want to get a higher rank. You realize that the pros are so much better than you, but you want to keep going. You want to keep trying.
What is Hearthstone nowadays?
It is
still hopping.
Still hopping. I mean, but there's obviously lots of controversy around the amount of legendaries that are dropping from packs and the price and is the meta already getting stale? I'm not going to bore anybody with this kind of stuff because I barely know what I'm talking about with it. But it's a very fun and well produced and silly game, just like Overwatch, just like the rest of Blizzard's properties. And it's a great game I can play on my phone while I take a shit at work.
What is the meta deck for Hearthstone? Who's the most used?
But in the last expansion, it would be the Pirate Warrior or your Pirate Rogue. There was a card called Patches the Pirate, where if you played any pirate and Patches was in your deck but not in your hand, he would instantly be drawn into something. He would be summoning any charge. So it was an easy way to, if you were playing a warrior and you had a weapon, or if you were playing a rogue and you had your hero power was also a weapon out, that means you could have like 5 or 6 damage on like turn 2 or turn 3. So it's highly aggro sort of a deck.
That sounds almost broken to me.
It was. It felt really, felt really, really broken. So this expansion is a lot more about control.
Okay.
But they've introduced this new mechanic called quests that are legendary cards, and there's a whole controversy around that. But the quest is, it's like every class has a different quest based on like, here, like the Hunter quest is play 7 1/1 drops, and then you get an 8/8/4/5 that allows you to have 15 3/3/1s. That's a crazy thing, but there's all the problem with these being legendaries means is you have to get a legendary to have this sort of meta deck. And if you get the meta deck, then it's almost there's no way to real counter these meta decks already. So there's like it's just fucking silly.
That is, this got so much more complicated.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was like, I don't really need to. I mean, yeah, no, that's get into it.
You got to get.
I was more just curious.
Brunlieb like, and Alan Linnick back here, too.
Yeah, I mean, Alan's helping me. Alan's a really great coach, and like, Alan's definitely spectated me a couple times. He's like, hey, you should think about this. And it's like, I like playing it because it's a fun, silly game, and it's colorful and cartoony.
Yeah, you're not. You don't care about winning.
I do care about winning, but not so much that I'm going to stay up super late and play it. But Alan's that's like, no, you've got some good skills. You just got to remember, like, these key things, and like you can watch pros play and you can pick other stuff, but when you have someone like helping you understand those first basic steps, kind of coaching you throughout a game, like it was interesting going from like rank 20 to rank 15 in the matter of a day just with Alan helping me with a couple games.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, great. So and he's a good guy. So Tim, what are you playing?
Let's start off on mobile. I had to remove Sentinels of the Multiverse
really?
From my phone. I was like I've done all these. It's still an amazing. It's like the three games I probably spent the most time playing on my smartphone are Sentinels of the Multiverse, Civilization Revolution back in the day, and what was the third one?
Hearthstone.
I spent a little bit of time on Hearthstone. Yeah.
But you're playing the free to play part of it. Like you probably weren't.
Yeah. And if I was ever going to go back to Hearthstone, I would definitely pay because I would just want to unlock those missions or whatever.
Yeah. The adventures.
Oh. Yeah. I can't remember what the third one is, but now I'm playing SteamWorld Heist.
Oh, so
have you played it?
That's
love
great.
SteamWorld
it's
Heist.
It's really cool.
It is so fun. You're playing on mobile though.
Yeah,
I play it on PS4. It's also fun.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's really great.
Really cool strategy. I'm trying to think. Okay, so 2D strategy game, kind of like Valkyria Chronicles.
Yes, and encounter based.
Yes,
turn based encounters. It's also sort of roguelike because the ships you deal with are randomized that way.
I have heard of this game, and I've seen it, and I was like, I really want to play this. I don't know why I haven't picked it up. Is it on PS4?
It's on PS4, it's on PC. And then SteamWorld Dig. Did you ever play SteamWorld Dig?
No.
That was their sort of like Terraria sort of semi-game in a steampunk cowboy world, which was really, really fun.
Yeah, that's supposed to be great, too.
Yeah, it's fun.
The heist looked way up my alley because it reminded me of XCOM and Valkyria Chronicles, which I really like.
Reigns. Have you guys played Reigns?
Reigns, yes. No. Reigns with the swiping back and forth.
Swiping back and
love
forth.
Love the Reigns.
Making,
very funny.
Making decisions as like a
king.
Weird cursed king.
Yes, yes.
And it's fascinating. I don't want to spoil anything because I feel like there are kind of spoilers.
There are some spoilers. It is this idea of you are playing multiple kings. A king could die and then another king is born. And the actions of your last life play into the new king's reign.
Yeah.
And there are certain sort of things you need to unlock by meeting people and doing certain things. And you have to manage your money, your religion, the army, and the people.
That's correct.
And those are, every action has a reaction to something else.
Yeah. So like if you run out of money, then the merchants own everything. You get kicked out of power.
Yes.
If the people become too powerful, they run you out. Like if the church becomes too powerful, same thing. So you got to balance. It's like making choices that you know will hurt a certain group of people to keep them in check. And it's fascinating.
It's also a very funny game, too. There's lots of silly things that will happen. This is not a spoiler. Eventually, there's some supernatural elements to this game, and eventually you have to get two werewolves to fall in love and get married.
Yeah.
See, I'm back in.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah. It's not like gritty politics.
It's certainly not gritty.
I was like, is this like Crusader Kings 2? Because I tried.
No. This is like
Crusader Kings. Very silly.
This is like if Adult Swim made a Crusader Kings 2.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
It's not a Vlambeer game, but it has a feel to that in terms of it's very well designed, very slick, interface is great. I don't understand how anyone would play it not on mobile, but I guess it's also very popular on Steam. But it's perfectly designed for mobile because you're just doing the Tinder swipe left or swipe right sort of thing. So that's all.
Going on dates as a game.
Yeah.
Mass Effect Andromeda, which takes us into our topic today. What is the future of RPGs? But let's just touch on Andromeda real quick.
Yeah.
Boys, I still don't think this is a bad game.
Boy, that's an interesting point, Tim.
Like, I love Mass Effect. Okay. And because of that, I accept its flaws. I will say this. This is a glitchy game.
And they're patching. There's a big patch coming out.
2 gig patch.
Yeah.
A 2 gig patch?
Yeah, yeah. He's in early access. He's in the early access beta
for
this game.
I've never heard of a 2 gig patch.
Yeah.
After a game was... non-DLC.
Yeah.
After a game
was
released.
This is an EA release. Is it EA?
Unacceptable amount of glitches, I will say that. Like...
Wow.
Yeah. People's... I'll walk up to people in a colony and their feet will just be in the ground. Like, quests that I can't finish for some reason because I just can't talk to this one person.
Oh,
like,
I'd break the disc if that happens.
Unacceptable in that sense, but like... I still really like what they tried to do with this game.
Okay.
And I'm still having fun, so, you know.
Okay, that's important.
Characters are pretty cool. I love the old, grizzled Krogan veteran.
Okay.
The new race that they came up with is pretty cool. There's just some real glitch problems in this game. I feel like if they fixed all of those, it'd be a solid 8.
An 8?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a 9. It's not groundbreaking or anything.
I'll take an 8. 8's great.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah, 8 is great. That's why it rhymes. a 9 is fine. And 10, try again.
Try again. Try again.
You got a 10, so it'll probably be good again. Yeah. You know?
That's right. It sounds dismissive. It's actually encouraging.
Keep making games.
I think as long as this podcast exists, we have finally solved the ranking thing. If anything, that is our gift to the world.
And 7 is, I hope there's heaven, because you're dead.
You're
there's
dead.
There's no way your game is going to make it.
Metacritic's going to rip this game apart.
Metacritic, the aggregate.
Yeah. Tim, you wanted to talk about what is the future of role-playing games.
And you think that it is Mass Effect.
You think it is Mass Effect, yes.
If this is the future, we're living it now.
Yes.
I just, I kind of don't know what... Well, I mean, I don't even know what role-playings are currently, like when we say that term.
Oh, see, I know what it is.
What is it?
Because I've been playing another game. I saved it. I saved the game to talk to you guys about the subject. Highly against protocol. I'm playing another game, a game that I've been looking forward to for 5 or 6 years now, Persona 5.
Oh, sure.
I think Persona 5 is the absolute future of a role-playing game.
Now, Kellen, I would love to know why you feel that way and what you love so much about Persona 5, but I want to check in with Tim. Tim, are you ready to hear about the future of RPGs from Kellen in the form of Persona 5, a series you've never played?
Here's what I'll say. I will be, but you got to clue the listeners in into what the Persona series is.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Listeners. Hi, it's me, Kellen. So remember how Clayton...
We can take a break now.
How Clayton would talk about these games, these...
Oh, Jesus, I haven't...
These Steals in the Sky games, and Tim and I would shake our heads and just be like, what the hell is this? But a part of my heart said, I want to play this game because I remember playing Persona 4, and that is the crazy batshit... when it rains, you have to go into the TV because there's an alternate world where people are going crazy. But when it's not raining, you're a Japanese school boy.
And you're going to school.
You're going to school. The game, the role-playing game is not you're going into dungeons. That's part of it. But most of the role-playing game is you're going to school and you are trying to be better at subjects. You're trying to make social connections. You're trying to get on certain sort of clubs.
You're trying to date.
Yeah. You have to get a side job because guess what? Things cost money in the real world. You're role-playing the life of this person. It's great. And Persona 4 is a really great game. It has its flaws in terms of how slow it is, but it is a really fun, very, very specific Japanese role-playing game. Persona 5 takes all the things that I love about Persona 4, speeds things up a little bit.
Oh, that's very good.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
In terms of the encounters and how you're dealing with things, and then also makes it so fucking jazzy and slick in terms of everything that looks.
You still going to school?
Still going to school.
Okay.
But as opposed to being in rural Japan, you're in downtown Tokyo.
Mm.
So imagine if you will, you're playing a video game, and it's like, by the way, if you don't get to school on time, you're going to be expelled, and you don't know how to get to school because the Japanese subway system is so fucking complicated.
Are you kidding
that's
me?
That's like, that's in the first hour.
You need to buy a transit pass.
Exactly, and, yeah, and right. Guess what? Nothing. Everything in the train system is all in Japanese, and you're like, what the fuck? And it's like, oh yeah, this is all done on purpose to make you feel defensive. If I don't get to school on time, I will be expelled.
That's great.
It's great.
Yeah.
How cool
was that?
Yeah.
It's a very non-linear story that's going on. This is not going to spoil anything. You are a kid who stops a sexual assault. The guy
wow.
who was trying...
It's a meaty opening.
Yeah, it's a meaty opening. You try and stop it. You stop a sexual assault on the street, but the person who's trying to perform the sexual assault is a very rich...
Well connected,
like lawyer person, and you push him down, and he sues you.
Sure.
Your family, because they can't stand up to this rich person, they're like, yes, he's always been a problem. You get expelled from your school, and essentially you get put on probation and sent to the city. So you have no friends, you have no connections. You're in this big city. The guy who's essentially hosting you is like, I don't care about you. I don't like you. If you
get a relative?
No, it's not a relative. Oh. It's just a random dude who's like, yeah, I know your family from way back in the day, but I don't really care about you.
I owe you.
What
Dad
a horrible
favor.
Opening.
Yeah, I mean, it is a situation where it's like you are down on your luck, and you're like instantly you're like, boy, this is really fucking
for doing
weird.
The right thing.
For doing the right thing, I but it say. Doesn't matter. And so everyone at the school doesn't like you because you're a kid with a criminal record. And it's like, just, boy, this is really scary. And eventually, so that's how it starts. But then there's a time freeze where you jump forward and you are in a giant casino and you've got this crazy, like, tuxedo mask from Sailor Moon outfit on.
Are you serious?
And you are performing a heist and you are being chased by all these cops. And there's hundreds and hundreds of cops who are trying to stop you and your gang from stealing something.
This is a flash forward?
This is a flash forward.
Oh. Is that Lupin the Third kind
yeah,
of deal?
Exactly. And so it's constantly going
amazing.
Back and forth between you're being interviewed, you're being questioned by a prosecutor, being like, I want to know how all of this happened. And then you go back and you're
I love
in school.
It.
And it's all this stuff. And then you go into these dungeons. And I'm not going to explain what the dungeons are because it's a very cool aspect. But as opposed to, I'm going back to the other role-playing game I played this year, Final Fantasy XV, which is a big, boring, empty, open world, and then you get in these random encounters, and it feels action-y, but it's also sort of role-playing-y. This is a turn-based role-playing game that has...
Really?
It's all turn-based. You can turn your companions... can have auto things, being like, all right, I'm going to have this guy be auto-healing, and this one's going to do magic, and this one's going to be defense, or you can control all of it. There's an aspect, too, where if you get the bad guys you're fighting knocked down, you can surround them, and then you can have a conversation with them like you would one of your classmates, and they will ask you random questions, and you pick up on right things. There's a Pokemon element where you can capture them, and then you get their power, and then they essentially become elements that you can call upon, your personas, that you can then use in other sort of battles.
Huh? This is great.
Now, exactly. Now, all of this, you would think, okay, so I'm walking through a dungeon and then the action sort of breaks and I go into this. All of this is you are sneaking through a dungeon.
Uh-huh.
If you ambush someone, you get an advantage on an attack. And then when you're done with it, you see your little XP thing happen and you're right back into the action. So it's smooth, complicated action gameplay. Really deep. I'm really interested in how these characters are making bonds and how they're progressing this way. It's so great.
That does sound very cool.
I was going to say, for us.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, your average Joe might
average
like,
Joe
might
not going to like it, but for us, for the games we like, this is so up our alley.
Yeah, I totally... everything is like... That would get a tooks in me, for sure.
Yeah.
I was trying to think the other day of like, what was the best RPG experience I've had recently? And it has to be Witcher 3. Like, that's the best one.
For me, it was, yeah.
That's the hard thing, though, is, like, is Mass Effect, is Witcher, those are, like, Western role-playing games, but they're also action games, and it's, like, there's so much stuff where it's, like, the role-playing game, like, the only reason I bring up Persona is, like, that's a traditional role-playing game.
Japanese role-playing game.
But, like, if you were to put Witcher and Persona up on a board, and you're like, point to the role-playing game. You're like,
absolutely Persona. I also throw, like, Ni No Kuni was up there.
Exactly.
You know?
Absolutely.
But also, people, like, they just aren't making American role-playing games like that specifically. Like that.
No. Yeah. I mean, yeah. There are some other sort of games that, like Bravery Default. There are plenty of the... There's a lot of, like... I mean, Square is still going to be making different sort of more traditional role-playing games that way. But you're right. There's not, like... you're not seeing Western companies come up with role-playing games because there's not much of a need for it or an interest in it.
Yeah. That's what I'm kind of thinking about is, like... So is nostalgia going to keep this genre alive? Like, does Persona 5 feel like a exercise in nostalgia?
No, not at all. It doesn't? Oh, not at all, man. I mean, like, I think if you had never played a traditional turn-based role-playing game, this would seem so fresh and interesting. Wow. Because it's not like you're playing, you know... Final Fantasy Tactics, where it's like, all right, I understand how to get around the board. Where it's like Banner Saga, that would be another sort of like traditional role-playing game, I would say. There's plenty of other games like that that take elements. But like, you're not going to see a Final Fantasy IV like role-playing game come out these days. But Persona takes those things and heightens it and also brings in all these other elements to really make the role-playing part of the game more than just the action dueling part of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, one of the things about Geralt in Witcher 3 that I think was so interesting and a reason why that game really worked was you do feel like you are really playing a Witcher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you feel like you get so deep into that world that role that you are playing of a Witcher, of a tough guy, you know, sometimes of a real asshole. Like, you get to figure out, like, how that comes across, how he expresses himself and everything like that. But it doesn't give you as much choice as a lot of those old JRPGs did in terms of, like, you know, like, who do you want to be? Yeah. Like, what type of character do you want to be?
What class or job do you want to have? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that there's, like, in Persona 5, like, is there room to play a role? Or is it really you're just kind of, like, a painted-on sort of... character.
There's room to play a role in terms of how you interact with people, absolutely. Even the job that you take. Like, I started working at a convenience store because I didn't want to worry too much about my time so much. I was like, great, it's less money, but it's easier for me to be flexible as opposed to if I was working someplace else. How I'm playing the game, there are certainly, in terms of dialogue options, there's plenty of options that way. It's not just black and white.
What are the kind of options that you have?
So... You in a lot of Persona games, the idea is you are either stoic or you are empathetic. And this way, there are a lot of times where you're like, I'm going to be funny or I'm going to be a real hard-ass asshole. Because there's a lot of like very... You're in a...
Squall Final Fantasy VIII.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah. Right. You can play flirty.
Everyone's favorite character.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But there's a lot of different ways. Again, I'm maybe 2 hours in... And I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to have these relationships. And the deeper the relationship you have, the more options you have about how you want to play it.
You're only 2 hours in and all this stuff
happened. That's what I'm saying about like how, like, again, the old Persona games, Persona 4 specifically, it was like 6 or 7 hours before you were like, I guess we're going to take the reins off of you.
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, it's still in the beginning. It's still very much like... It's not a cutscene per se, but it's still on rails, but you're constantly being like, I want to progress. I want to see what I'm going to do next. I want to see what I'm going to do next. And then they let you go and you're like, okay, cool. I finally have my time. All right. We're going to keep you here. So it does a very good job of not holding your hand, but like showing you where the path is and saying, as opposed to in Witcher, where it's like, you want to go that way. You can. It's like, we just want to keep you here. So you understand the basics, because the moment the training wheels come off, There's no way you can turn the clock back.
Yeah, there's
because you only have so much time in the day to do things. So your actions, just like in real life, guys, have consequences. So if I decide to go to the batting cages because I want to improve my strength, that's fine. But I don't have enough time to study for school. And if I go to school the next day and I haven't studied and there's a pop quiz... Well, guess what? I might not pass that pop quiz.
Uh-oh.
My classmates would be like, this guy's a fucking weirdo. My companions, their opinion of me lowers... And then suddenly we don't have the same bond. If we go into the dungeon, we don't have the same bond. We don't have those buffs that way.
Right? Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So I was, while playing Mass Effect Andromeda, Clayton, I thought about something you talked about recently, which was, I think we were talking about ways Skyrim has affected the industry since it came out. And you talked about how everything has to be a huge map now with a ton of shit going on that's not that interesting.
Yeah.
That is like the second worst thing about Mass Effect Andromeda. It's like seven huge maps, huge, just a lot of driving around.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like scan 18 minerals across these planets and like find these things and, you know, I don't
just like fetch quests.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that we're ever going to get free of those. Like, it's just like, I was even thinking about within a quest, like how hard it must be to write some of those sometimes, because like, you know, I was doing one where like I was on a derelict ship and it's like, well, you can't get into this next fight because of how the momentum of a mission works. You got to have down periods and then fights and then like puzzle areas and then fights and then, you know, like working with the flow. And
but is it arbitrary or like that's in the game? Like it won't let you go on.
Well, it's in the game, but it feels arbitrary.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's like the game design, as opposed to everyone like in the game stops. It's like, hold on one second. Everyone put your guns down. We have to solve this puzzle first.
Yeah, like how cool would it be if it was like, you have like 30 seconds, you have to like get through this fight, and it's just like heavy, heavy combat, heavy combat, heavy combat, and then you finish, and then it's like, boom, mission's over, and it was just like really intense.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. It's now it's like, oh, you know what? Variety is the spice of life. So we're gonna like make sure every mission has like so many components that it gets everything starts to get a little tedious, because it's like you're not gonna like at least one part of this.
Yeah.
You know, like if not multiple. Mm. I've seen this exact same problem in other games, Tim. And it makes me so like, as a person who, you know, has played a lot of video games and has like now started to, you know, like dungeon master and do all these things where I'm designing games for and experiences for people, I'm like, oh no. Like this is so like wrong-headed, because it's that idea of like, oh, people just want variety. And it's like they do, but what that means doesn't apply to every single moment of the game.
No, it should still have purpose. Like each moment should be informed by the last one too.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, it feels disconnected. And I feel like I just played a game recently that had this exact same problem, and now I'm blanking on what it was. But it was just a similar thing where it was like, actually, you know, Mad Max also does a little bit of this, like, where you're like, it's great, and then it's just like, I don't want to do this anymore. Yeah. What happened?
Sure.
Yeah. The tedium of that was also just like, all right, here's the driving part. Then you get out, you do the punching part. Then you get back in more of the driving part. Every time. Yeah. And it was like, dude, I'm fine with just a driving mission.
Like, it doesn't need to be both. No.
Yeah.
It can just be this.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that we are talking about Dark Souls. I would probably put Dark Souls in that role-playing game as well in terms of...
Yeah, I would too.
I would too.
And I think Dark Souls probably is closer to a semi-future of what role-playing games will be after playing Neo. It's just like thinking about what that game was in terms of like bit more on the rails, a little bit more we're going to help you kind of get through some things, but still being very much in you play the character the way you want to play it. You can spec the way you want to go through these sort of missions. You can grind. You can do whatever you want. But still having that same sort of Dark Souls of what I think Dark Souls sort of refined really well of like really build out a character in a... You mentioned D&D. That's why my mind went there. Mm-hmm. It's like that's much more of that role-playing aspect to me.
Yeah. So now, I mean, we all agree Dark Souls, role-playing game.
Yeah.
Persona, role-playing game. Ni No Kuni, role-playing game. I think in the general sense, Mass Effect and Dragon Age role-playing games.
And Witcher. Yeah.
So now let's take it a step further. And I'm blanking on the name of this game, but we spent a whole episode on it with Vince, the New York...
Oh, Mafia 3, right?
No. New York virus...
The Division?
Oh, the Division. Oh, man.
It's a Division role-playing game.
No, because then I would have to say Assassin's Creed is a role-playing game, and Far Cry is a role-playing game. Like,
and like I, you know, this wasn't the conversation I initially wanted to have, but like,
oh yeah.
So it's not just fantasy elements or sci-fi elements, and it's not just the menu system, which is infecting like everything else in games.
Yeah,
like Red Dead Redemption has like.
Yeah. I mean, like Red Dead Redemption is an action game. The Division is an action game with role-playing elements.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I think there has to be something at its heart. Like the Division, if if the Division is a role-playing game, then Destiny and Call of Duty are role-playing games.
Isn't
you know?
Destiny... No, Destiny's not a
role-playing game. No, Destiny's supposed to be an MMO, and there's elements of right. a role-playing game in Destiny. And who knows, with Destiny 2 coming out this year, they may double down on that. I'm not sure, because I don't think it's actually possible to do that.
Wait. Have we even checked in with Kellen about the Destiny 2 trailer?
I don't...
Kellen!
God.
How do you feel?
I'm really torn, guys. I'm really torn.
It seems like Destiny 2 is going to have a bit more personality than Destiny 1.
Well, I think they realize what people wanted. And that trailer, I think, is really interesting. I think it's really lame that it's these two guys talking the whole time, and you have this third protagonist like Cora Ray, who's so interesting and stoic and is all the magic aspect of it, and she doesn't get to say a fucking thing besides, oh my god, I can't believe this dude. But I think they know why people play that game. They play that game the same way that people play Diablo 3, is because they want to grind and they want to get loot and they want to have that very similar cycle. Mm-hmm. There is an element of role-playing in that, the same way that, again, Diablo 3 is very much a role-playing game that way, where you can spec your character the same way. But
yeah.
It's not like those games are so... like, you're not going to have a personal experience... the same way you're going to have a personal experience with Ni No Kuni or Persona 4 or Witcher
sure.
3.
Yeah.
That is a, we're going to give you the sandbox and give you role-playing elements in that sandbox.
That's right. Yeah.
But it's not, you're not playing a role. You mm-hmm. are, you're just this guy or this girl there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's how I've always felt. Every time I play a Diablo game or anything similar to it, it's like I'm just a like walking murder factory
yeah.
with no personality.
Yeah.
And the problem a lot of the time with those games is you don't affect any choices. Your character doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
no.
You're just kind of along for the ride.
Exactly.
And the agency of the main character is so important
Perfect.
In role playing
yeah.
games.
Yeah.
And that's why I come across like some games that are a little bit more on rails, like you mentioned Persona was, I wonder, it's like, that's why I was like, I'm interested in what kind of choices you can make, how
yeah.
you can affect the world and stuff
yeah.
like that, too.
When you brought up the agency thing, I was reminded of this mission I really wanted to talk to you guys about, Mass Effect Andromeda, because it drove me nuts, which was... And it's...
Yeah, this is a mission you could finish, because it didn't glitch out on you.
True,
yeah.
true.
So it's already... Gotta be better than some.
Yeah.
To hark back to The Division, Extra Credits has this great video about its problem with The Division, which is that, like, you're supposed to be this elite soldier and solving these problems around the community, but you're not, like, really solving community problems. You're just showing up and shooting people.
Yeah.
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 And,
you're shooting
yeah.
looters, and then you go and you shoot their, and you loot their bodies.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's this one in Mass Effect Andromeda where you're establishing this Krogan colony and helping them do that, and then somebody just goes like, oh, stay away from the Flophouse, there's some bad people there. And the Flophouse is this like bandit fort, and you open the door and then you walk in and someone starts shooting at you, and then boom, that's the mission, you just gotta kill everybody. And
huh.
I just can't help but think like, let's
a huge
take a second
opportunity.
First
yeah.
off, it's their property, it's
yeah.
their land, you
yeah.
are walking into their home essentially.
Yeah.
So they shoot at you because, look, here, even here in America, if you walk into somebody's house, they can shoot you.
Yeah, man.
That's just one of these things in society that we've all just agreed upon. And then you murder everyone, and I guess you're the hero for doing that.
See, there were some bad people over there. And I said some, implying there were also some people who were not.
Yeah.
That is insane.
That's
like unreal.
That could be a really cool like moment, like in Shane, where you're like, "Hey, man, pick up the gun." No, I don't want to pick up the gun. Pick up the gun.
Yeah.
Bam! You saw me had a gun. That's why I shot him in self defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like, yeah. It's purely bred out of laziness. That's the thing. It's design laziness.
Yeah.
It's just like, here's another encounter where you're shooting a bunch of people.
Well, I mean, it's weird though, because it seems like Mass Effect Andromeda, it was so intentional to have the glitches and to have the people in the, you know, their hands. It just seems like that was an intentional thing, that they intentionally did that.
You know,
it just seems like it's odd that they decided to make those story missions lazy, but they made those other things intentional.
I gotta be honest, like, I want to compare it to a Mass Effect 2 moment that I thought was like really jarring and upsetting, in a good way, in a way that I thought the game was intentionally trying to bother you, which is when you do Jacob's loyalty mission in Mass Effect 2
yeah.
Yeah.
and find his father and his father's crew, who, now there's a time where you're like, hey, we're here to save these people, And you show up and they recognize an outside threat and start shooting at you. And you have to defend yourself and quickly realize, oh, this is like turned into a very Heart of Darkness bad situation where some people are being oppressed and other people are dominating them and using violence and force to do it. And it's like this really cool, like, you know, it's almost the same thing, right? All you need is just a little bit of context and a little bit of like, like, you know, a hook into it, and you can make those missions work. But instead, it's like you walk in, they shoot you, you shoot all of them, and it's like, and then you stand and watch the people come back, and it's like, all right, good job, me. And it's like, that's not, that, I don't care. Who were they?
Yeah.
What were they doing?
You know? even like, let's take it to the extreme. Let's say this is like a terrorist cell.
Yeah.
Like, when we, not to tie this into politics, but like, hey, when we heard about the Yemen raid a few months ago, like, women died. Like, there was this story there.
Yeah, children died. Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's something, there's more of a story there than just walking in and murdering people.
Yeah.
Or there should be.
And it would be interesting in an action role-playing game if the way you went in had effects of things. You could go in and you can talk, and that could go right or wrong. Or if you went in and you guns blazing, there would be casualties right there. Where it's like, you threw a grenade in there and everyone died, but guess what? There was also some people who didn't need to be there, who you killed. You know,
somebody's family member was just visiting.
In there. Exactly. In a time when we've found that gray morality can work in video games, and that it's even sought after in a lot of like communities, it's like, why not? Why not try it? You know, and take that risk. I mean, I'll never. I still get sick to my stomach thinking of Spec Ops: The Line, a stupid game where it deals with that exact same idea of like, hey, the only way to win is to fight, but every time you fight, you're accidentally like causing casualties or you're killing. It's just so affecting and interesting. It just seems like such a wasted opportunity. That's really what it is.
But it's because you make this world so big, because there's this Skyrim effect, that they can't have depth that way.
No.
But you see what Witcher does. I just think about the Bloody Baron quest that way, where it's like, exactly, talk about a gray morality, where it's like, the more, the deeper you go into that quest, and there are plenty of times where you can say, I'm out of here. I'm a Witcher. I got my money. I'm done. But you can keep going, and you can keep going, and it gets messier and messier and messier.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good way of kind of blurring these lines of like, well, why are you here? Why are you helping certain people?
Yeah.
Like, are you doing it for the right reasons? And it's just so great, man. Yeah.
I told you guys about how I have been reading The Witcher books, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've read all the ones that have been translated now.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, they are fantastic.
Uh-huh.
They are really worth checking out. If I could just do a quick aside. They are, oh man, are they good.
When were they written?
They, I think they were written like 93 through like 2003 or something like that. And, there's 8 books total. Last one, the 8th one, still has not been translated. It's coming out next year in the summer. Can't wait. But this one didn't end on too much of a cliffhanger. And also it's starting to get into the point where it's like, I actually know what happens here.
Cause
they reference it enough in the Witcher games.
Yeah.
But yeah, really worth checking out. And, but yeah, talk about like those ideas, just like every single person in that universe. If you sit down and drill into their brain for long enough, you will find they are fucking terrible.
Yeah.
It's just like, or they have something fucking terrible in their lives, you know?
Yeah.
And, I'm like, man, this is so awesome and so good and well written. And like the games capture that idea so well.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've always like, love this idea that like our video games are they, you know, storytelling? What exactly are they? Because like some of them, like Planescape Torment, is basically a book.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
right. It's an interactive book.
80 days.
Yeah. And RPGs have always been like the purest expression in my mind of like you are this character.
Yeah,
like first person shooters. No, that's not really a character. You're just, again, one man walking murder factory.
Yeah.
and but like in RPGs, it's like That's the time you can, like, you have adventures and you, like, solve crimes sometimes. You know, you do all sorts of cool different stuff. So to see it devolving into just, like, all right, you go here, you shoot this guy, is like, yeah.
There's elements of Persona 5. And again, if you guys play it, I don't want to give away too much. But, like, again, you're at this school. And, again, I said, it's like, you try and stop this victim of sexual assault. And it's like, boy, that's a big way to start.
Yeah.
And then there's this sort of questionable teacher at the school that it's not implied that they are sexually assaulting people, but there are rumors within the school. And so your character has to decide how they feel about what's going on, with the knowledge is that no one trusts you. So if you decide to get involved in this, that is a, it has a chance to blow up in your face. So it's this idea of, are you going to listen to the people who have a problem with this guy? Or are you going to say, I just need to keep my head down? You have that option. Your option of keeping your head down.
Did you benefit from keeping your head down?
Yes. Sense, well, you benefit from keeping the head down in the sense where it's like, I don't want to get involved in this.
Sure.
And the fact that it gives you that option
is
interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Weird.
That it's not like, well, there's no other way. You have to get there. You will be involved some way or another.
But Personas always play with morality a little bit.
Exactly.
That way.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Now, you will eventually find out why this guy is doing this and why people are feeling this way. And then it gets grayer and grayer and grayer and wild. And it's like, it's really cool to see something like, I don't want to say anything because
I
want you guys to play this game. But like, in one example, Witcher 3, very bleak and bloody and very intense that way. But then you have Persona 5, same sort of stakes, but so much more nuanced in this sort of teen high school element, but there's still intensity going
sure,
on that
yeah.
way. And that's why I think both these are two great examples of like what a role-playing game can do, because it's putting you, the player, in these situations where you're like, how am I going to navigate this?
Yeah.
How do I, as the player, or how am I role-playing this character, going to get through this?
Do you think, going back to the problem of the big world kind of issue with role-playing games, do you think that, because I really think it was the same thing with Fallout 4, like, the most recent entries in these, like, iconic games that I love have sucked lately. Like, Dragon Age Inquisition wasn't great, in my opinion.
Yeah,
Fallout 4 was not great. Mass Effect Andromeda is...
Final Fantasy
15
is
another
giant world where you're like, boy, I am, like, this could be a quarter, maybe an eighth of the size, and be that much more interesting.
If it just had meaning to all
just
of it.
Just meaning, yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, like, is that just all of these game developers, let's say, watching Skyrim? When these games all started, that was probably the one that was hot at that moment.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. That's a very good point.
Do you feel like, except for Final Fantasy 15, which was like a decade ago.
Yes.
we're just going to reach for it. Hope that we get there.
Do you feel like that is just, well, what are the kids into now? Oh, they're into Skyrim? We'll make our Final Fantasy 15 kind of Skyrim-y.
Mm-hmm.
Or do we feel like this is something that if these games get bad reviews, which a lot of them have, this will self-correct? And like,
I think it will self-correct, mostly because I think the issue that they're just now kind of starting to figure out is that they're going too wide. It's like, it's a great idea, but they just didn't, there wasn't enough depth to the gameplay or the game or both. And I feel like that's, once they make that realization with stuff like Breath of the Wild is selling like crazy. Which I did not think that was going
to
be a role playing game. And in a big way it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, how is your Link navigate this world?
Yeah.
You know, like, how far are you willing to, you know, like, invest into some of these crazy things that you have to do? And, you know, like, how much money are you going to grind for? How many animals are you going to murder?
Yeah. Yeah.
Take their precious meat.
Yeah.
It's, I feel like it will self-correct, but I don't know. They frustrate me.
When I think about self-correcting, like, it seems like Resident Evil did a pretty good job of
self-correcting.
They did. Yeah.
Recently.
But how many
in a very different way.
In a different way, but how many strikes did Resident Evil take before they got to that point?
Oh, my God.
I mean,
5 and 6. I mean, right?
Five, six, but then they had all these little spin-off things like Raccoon City,
HD remakes. It's like, it's great that they're back here, but are they going to nail this down?
That's a good question.
The main reason they made Resident Evil 7 is because the VR was going to take off, and that was the new thing that they were going to do. And look, I mean, I can't go outside without seeing someone wearing a VR system.
VR helmets everywhere.
Everywhere. That's the main reason we're not doing the podcast. We're doing a virtual reality cast.
That's right. You get to play as me playing video games.
Ooh. I wouldn't mind that.
That'd be very cool. You would have a blast, I can tell you. Because I do.
Yeah. I really don't know. I think Breath of the Wild is the thing where it's like, that's going to be a deciding factor in terms of what people decide to do, because I think I felt the same way before Breath of the Wild came out, being like, well, we're not going to have these giant open world games anymore. Like, there's going to be enough diminishing returns to say that this is being, until a new engine gets developed that someone can create a cheaper way of doing this.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think that's what happens, is you have these big worlds because it's cheap to do.
Well, and what was the worst of it? No Man's Sky, right? Where it was just like, God. It's so huge. Look at how huge it is. Oh, this is going to be
That really
incredible.
Was the breaking point. Yeah. I've really never seen anything like that. Yeah. It was like, you forgot to put all the stuff in your game, guys.
Where's the game? Where's the game?
Yeah.
But people love that. People love it. I mean, they keep putting new things in that game. It's like, no, you're going to come back. It's like,
No Man's Sky?
I'm good. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They keep releasing updates. Yeah. I mean, maybe. Yeah. Maybe in a few years they'll have put a game in there, which would be nice. But right now it's just an engine.
It was the same way with Destiny. It's the same way with Diablo. There are a lot of these games this way. Hell, it's the same way with Mass Effect Andromeda, where it's like the game comes out, and there are people who enjoy playing it, and then the game's not necessarily finalized right now, but people will continue playing it because they like the world that they're in.
It really is like, hey, let's see how many people we can get to buy the game. Okay, that seems like enough. Let's see if we can make the game good now.
Yeah. You know what I've really had to stop doing is assuming that because a development company spent like 5 or 6 years on a game, that it's going to be good. That doesn't mean anything, you know?
Not anymore. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you think that over the years we were doing this podcast, we would have done some research on what it took to make a video game, like why it takes 5 or 6 years. I don't have any idea. I don't know why it takes them that long.
I mean, I do. It's because it's incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
Like all the stuff they have to do, especially a lot of these games building their engines totally from scratch.
These Mass Effect Andromeda planets look beautiful.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just like, you know, the lead animator, I guess, got some heat because of the animation problems. And it's you have no concept of how hard this guy's job is. Like, you will never have this kind of pressure in your life. And you're just sitting there on your couch, like, playing the game, and it's like, you fucked it up. So
one of the lead animators for Naughty Dog did have some commentary on it, saying like, look, I've done this, I can see where they cut corners. He had like a 9-tweet thread saying like, this is when you're seeing this, this is not necessarily the developer's fault, this is the studio's fault, this is these people's fault, like, there's all these things that are going on, you can see
that's the thing you can really point to a lot of the time, is like, you know, how much pressure were they under to make this goddamn game come out that day? Yeah. And it's like, you know, Breath of the Wild got that delay and everyone, you know, got annoyed, but, you know, hey, whatever.
Yeah. And even now Breath of the Wild's having a patch that's going to fix a lot of those frame rate issues. That's going to fix a lot of the small minor things that people were saying, oh, this maybe makes it a 9.8 versus a 10, where it's like, it's a great game. Like, that's all it needs to be.
Exactly.
And they're just making it smoother and better, you know? 10.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, the difference between a, you know, release that's good and then a small patch later is so vast. And, you know, even if the game was delayed, it's still so vastly superior to releasing a game, putting out a 2 gigabyte patch.
Yeah, man.
You know, how long has it been since it came out?
Week and a half, 2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and when it comes out, it'll be
2 gigs is huge.
Probably have been a month by the time it actually hits.
But so then you have to think about...
It's out. I downloaded the 2.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
So they went gold probably 2 months ago to start making the game on the disc, right?
Yeah.
So that means it's been a two-month sort of death march to get all of this done.
That must be an exhausting job.
Yeah, like
as a developer, you have to know that there are problems.
Oh yeah,
because they're video game fans themselves.
Yeah,
and then you release this thing knowing it's not ready yet.
But you're under contract to be like, and when the game is done, you're done.
Yeah.
So that's up to the studio to say, we're going to pay these guys this much more money to get this game done.
Yeah.
That's really going to be the deciding factor in terms of like what we're talking about here is like the future of RPGs. It's like, are we going to see people basically say, you know, gritting their teeth and being like, okay, I mean, it's not great, but it's good enough and I'll take it.
I mean, how big is that CD Projekt Red team?
It's a, I don't know, 100 odd people.
Yeah.
No, but they have, decent.
The thing is it's, they're not necessarily an American developer. Like, the amount of state money that's going into that game.
What?
Yeah, how much is it? $10 million?
$10 million to develop this whole concept of, like, a seamless multiplayer environment. This idea of, I could walk into your world and you walk into my world and there's not a loading screen. It's just, we're all there that way.
Clayton, I fear I cut you off there.
Oh, no, you're fine. I was just saying, like, it's just, you know, that's going to be the deciding factor is, like, when are these game companies just going to basically say, like, look, you know, like, we're working on a game. When it's ready, it's ready. And when it's out, it's out. And it's like, that. I really don't believe they owe us anything more than that. Like, it's like, you want to give us a timeline? Great. If you want to show us the process, like, a lot of these early access games, as much of shit as we give them, they at least release weekly updates on, like, here's what we're doing, here's what we're working on, here's how we're fixing it. Like, if you did that and you just were like, you jump into this game whenever you want, and you pay your money and all that stuff, like they do with early access, I think that would be fine.
Yeah. The hard thing about that is, though, I'm sorry to cut you
off. No, you're fine.
It's like, then you have a situation with Final Fantasy 15 where it's like, they're like, great, we'll get this game when it comes out. And then a new system comes out and a new engine, and they have to scrap all of that work to try and do something else where it's like, the hunger for everybody wanting the new stuff and wanting to do, it's just tough. It's really, it is a very hard thing to succeed at, which only makes the games that do succeed that much more brilliant.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
It's, you just, you gotta put the work in. You can't cut corners, like you were saying.
I also think there's one silly thing is it's all about pre-orders these days, too.
Yeah.
The amount of pre-orders determine the money that people have to get that stuff in. Because
God, I forgot about that.
And there is, that's a lot of what people are saying about what happened with Mass Effect.
That's part of their
budget. The Mass Effect Andromeda looks the way it does because not enough people pre-ordered it. Because if those pre-orders then say, great, we now have this money to devote to building, to hiring more people on to get this thing out the door.
But then you can't depend on pre-order money.
But they, but the business model's built that way now because people were so fucking excited about pre-orders, and that's the reason why there's all this, like, you know, for going back to Destiny 2, it's like, hey, pre-order now and get access to the beta code, where it's like, all right, I'm gonna give you $60 now so you can finish this game, and then you'll get me to play the game in beta so I can tell you why the game works or doesn't work.
It's like a weird roundabout way of doing a Kickstarter, essentially.
It absolutely is.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good way of putting it.
That's
real. You're, as a corporation, you're doing Kickstarter with pre-order money.
Yeah, right.
It's like when fucking Zach Braff was like, I'm going to make a movie. You know who should help me? Everyone other than Hollywood. I didn't even care about that, really. But it is that, right? Yeah. I mean, it's just like, aren't you supposed to be able to just make games? Isn't that your game studio? Isn't that, like, part of the deal? Like, am I crazy?
We're wandering into a criticism of capitalism here.
I'm fine with that. Organize the masses. Organize the masses. Mark's had it right, guys, when talking about video games. Mark said it all right.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. It makes, like, every time, you know, I look at, like, a cop on the street, I basically look at them and I'm like, you can just tell me what to do, can't you? Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, you. You know? You weren't elected. Someone sent you to school and someone gave you a gun and you can just say, guess what? I have the authority to tell you what to do.
It's just, you know, that's, and you know what? With capitalism, it's the same basic idea.
Yeah.
Anyway.
To say, Angel listening, we really appreciate that our taxpayers are going to you.
Obviously, we love everybody.
Well, folks, it kind of seems like the future of RPGs is going to be Japanese.
It's going to be Japanese, and it's going to be Kickstarters. That's what it's going to be. I'm telling you, man. Like, Torment, Tides of Numenera. Yeah. That's a great RPG, man. Mm-hmm. That one's fucking amazing. And it took, like, just a bunch of Kickstarter money.
Yeah, sure. It's a bummer to think about Kickstarter money too. This is a total side note. I'm sidebar, but do you see that like Yooka-Laylee is like a game that we've been thinking about? Like, oh, here's going to be this really fun, you know, sort of Yooka-Laylee game, and then everyone's like, no, it's a total piece of shit. Feels like an old game. It's not very good. It's just like, boy, that stinks.
Yeah, that sucks.
Boy, that really stinks.
It's a risky run, though.
It's a risky run, man.
I think that's just what it's going to be from now on. It's just like, because yeah, Kickstarter games. There was a time where I was like, man, if a game gets like Kickstarter money, like it's gonna be good.
And that's Mighty Number Nine, man.
Yeah, yeah, you're gonna get super hot.
Yeah,
which was great.
Yeah. Or even but, some of those Double Fine games are like, yeah, they're okay.
Yeah
they're
exactly. But now it's gonna be the thing of like, no, this is garbage.
Yeah. It's just hard, man. It's hard to make games, and it costs a lot of money, and it takes a real. That's why fucking Kojima is so good. Let's see him make a fucking role playing game.
Oh, I would love.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, Snake Eater's the closest to a role playing game. That's in the Metal Gear series, you know?
Very true. You're right. If there was a leveling system, I think it would be basically an RPG.
Yeah, but then combine that like the third person elements of that with the sort of base building aspect. You've essentially got a role playing game, right?
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah. Yes, or
Peace Walker is supposed to be more that way. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, I haven't played that.
Yeah, because you didn't own a PSP.
If you can believe it, yeah. Me and billions of others. I think that's it. Anything else you guys have to?
Yeah, man.
No. Plugs? Anything to plug?
I was first off late 90s Wednesdays at 10:30 at IO, that's in Chicago. The other thing, I was on the One Shot podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if the episode's released yet, but go check it out. The episode is for a game system called Faith.
That's awesome.
Which is a sci-fi, like, sort of religion and magic RPG. Tabletop RPG.
Yeah, nice.
Really, really fun. Card-based. It was a little bit funny because they've released a new version of it since this one came out. So we ran into a problem like guns don't tell you how much damage they do, weird stuff like that. But it was actually really fun to play. And I played a nebbish alien who thinks he's smarter than everyone else.
Who are you on it with?
It was me, James D'Amato, and a couple of folks who were great. Pranks, if people know Pranks, he's great. I guess he's on a lot of those. And my other dude, who, you know, I love him, he was there too.
I love him, man.
With Mel on the ones and twos.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, any other questions that I don't know the answer to?
No, I think we're good.
Tim?
15 minutes with Lincoln. Lincoln and I reunited. Out with my girlfriend.
You guys got in a bad fight, though. Like, I mean, like, he...
We got in some scraps during that episode. I'm still at the YMCA. I'm going to be recording episodes out of there. We're going to take it one episode at a time and just see how it goes, you know?
Do you talk to any other presidents recently?
Gosh, I tried to record an episode with two presidents that did not work.
Oh, really?
The episode only recorded about 11 minutes worth. I recorded one with Andrew Jackson and Teddy Roosevelt.
I bet that would have been comedy gold.
Maybe it'll be released as a special episode at some point.
Oh, boy.
That's too bad.
Sounds
like a fun situation.
That would have been really fast.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Oh, well.
Cool. I guess listeners at home, you just have to imagine
what that was doing. Patreon backers will get an early access to that episode, I guess.
Calvin?
I want to promote Raytheon. They're producing Tomahawk missiles. If you have some money... buy some stock in Raytheon because I think we're going to war, folks.
Oh boy,
yeah, that's it.
We're all too old to be drafted, right?
I mean, who knows in the future robot war, though? I think they're going to put a railgun in anybody's hand, right?
Boys, do we know what we're doing next week? We haven't even decided.
We haven't decided who's up. So it'll be one of our episodes.
Stay tuned. We're going to have one more special episode of Talking Musicals before we...
Oh, that would be good. I like that.
Yes, absolutely.
Three episodes left. Thanks for tuning in. Bye. Oh, wait. Clayton, come on, take us out.
What?
Clayton, take us out with one of your catchphrases.
Don't skip me. I'm in line.
Bye, everybody.
This has been a Nerdalogs production. If you'd like to help make more things like this, please visit patreon.com/nerdalogs to donate today. and go to www.nerdlogs.com for more cool stuff. Thanks for being awesome.
Thank you all. I am GrabBot23548X.